This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we are going over Surprised by Love. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time.
Are you ready for
one dry kiss?
Yes! Doing the timeless classic, Won't You Come Home, Bill Bailey?
I thought I didn't even realize when I did that. I was like, that sounds familiar. I think it ends like this. So I'm very happy today to have come through.
You know, it's that household song, Won't You Come Home, Bill Bailey. Everybody knows.
Oh my gosh. No.
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to Hallmark movies, where we recap one Valentine for us in February movie. We are doing the movie Surprised by Love. I would like to introduce my lovely co-host, who I have the heart eyes for and the Valentine in my heart, Tamara Cosio.
Oh, and I would like to introduce my co-host, my surprising girl who gives good brow, co-host Corinne Eddy.
Nice.
Thank you.
So, yes, Paul Campbell, will you be our Valentine?
He's so nice. We did him twice because this is our second run at Surprised by Love.
Oh, my gosh.
Or second go round, I should say.
Can I tell you, though, how, like, watching this movie and re-scripting it out and everything, this movie had levels that I did not expect it to have. I gained a deeper appreciation of this movie watching it more times and picked up on things that I hadn't before. And this movie is fucking quirky. It's, like, weird and lovely and sweet and fucked up. And how did this get made? I don't know, because it's a fucking Hallmark movie. It shouldn't have been made, except somehow it was birthed into this world via Hallmark, and I am so thankful for it.
I'm not going to say that I am not surprised that you saw new things, because you've probably watched this movie a total of like 9 times now. I think I have the whole thing memorized.
Ooh, I can't wait for your sock puppet theater.
So your Valentine and mine as well is definitely Paul Campbell, but do have to give a strong shout out to Mr. Tim Conway, who is also in this movie, who's a motherfucking gem. Rest in peace.
Mm-hmm. And Hilary Burton, who is the female lead in this movie, but she's great in this as well.
She's great. Looked up IMDb for this, as I'm wont to do before we have our show, and in her IMDb promo picture, like, she's a brunette and she's super cute as a brunette. Like, I thought she was gorgeous as a blonde, but seeing her as a brunette, I was like, oh no, brown hair girls have more fun too. Look at you. That's my wolf whistle. Weed wee. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Corinne for the save.
I'm happy to do a whistle assist.
Whistle assist, my whistle assist co-host, Corinne Edding. I can only whistle if I hurt my fingers. Shh, never mind. Probably not. Good to do that on a recording.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because I'm like, that's going to be really loud.
You don't need to prove it to me now, Tam. You don't need to prove it to me now.
When we're outside in a big field, that's the time you do it. Or you need to find me when I've wandered off in Target. One or the other will do just fine.
Ah, we have a secret whistle, so like, you know it's me.
Yeah.
Not like, well, who else is going to be whistling in Target? What the fuck? So, Corinne, do you have a synopsis for Surprised by Love?
Well, yes, I actually do. It is handcrafted, and I had a little bit of a difficult time with this, so we'll see how cohesive this synopsis is, but, you know.
Okay.
I tried. Mm-hmm. I expect my participation award. That's all I'm saying. Synopsis. Josie Mayfield, played by Hilary Burton, is a 30-something executive at her family's coffee/tea/fancy homewares company. Her parents' 40th anniversary is coming up, and they're having a big party. But her dad, the CEO of the company, doesn't want her to bring her boyfriend Richard because He's awful.
Mm-hmm.
And usually I have a problem with, like, cheatiness movies, but, like, not this one. No.
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 While out running, she happens upon Maxwell Gridley, a.k.a. Gridley, played by Paul Campbell, our dream date, and her prom date from high school, selling driftwood creations in the park. It's a better situation than it sounds, other than the fact that the driftwood creations are horrible. Don't worry, I got that covered, Tam.
Yeah, thank you. I had long conversations our first recording about his driftwood quote-unquote creations.
When she brings Richard, the guy her parents openly detest, to meet Gridley and see his creations, Richard has an idea. Why doesn't Josie bring Gridley home as her date for their big shindig? Gridley will make him look incredible in comparison, and finally, he will be appreciated. Gridley is in, and hijinks ensue as she shakes up her very traditional family with the very untraditional Gridley. Will Richard finally be welcomed into the warm embrace of Josie's family?
Warm embrace.
Will the Mayfield house be completely decorated with driftwood sculptures by the time the movie is over? Will Josie steal Gridley's eco-fuel truck and decide to ditch everyone and follow her bliss, leaving everyone else behind crying? Stay tuned to find out.
Great synopsis.
Thank you. I am so interested in what you will have as your fun fact. Intrigued, yes. Even.
Mm-hmm. First, I do have to say about Gridley, I remember once upon a time, I think I said that I prefer Paul Campbell in his non-surly roles.
Uh-huh.
And after watching this one, I miss surly Paul Campbell.
Aww.
I miss surly mechanic wedding every weekend kind of know-it-all. But I miss that surly little tang that he brings in his other roles.
Only original pots.
Phenomenal. Only original pots, Paul Campbell. Only original pots. So Corinne and I had an agreement because of the lovely Tim Conway being in this movie. And he was phenomenal in this role as Granddad. They just called him Granddad. No other name needed.
Needable.
No other name needed. His charm and what makes him truly special is his physical comedy.
Oh, so good.
Physical comedy does not convey well on a recap podcast.
No.
So we are making all of these fun facts about Mr. Tim Conway, R.I.P. He did pass away from dementia in 2019.
Aww.
I think he was diagnosed in 2018. And this movie was done in 2015.
Ooh, way to
still
bring
kicking,
it.
Still doing what he do.
Yeah.
So Tim Conway, if you don't know, was a very, very funny physical actor. I enjoyed him immensely growing up. He did a lot of movies with Don Knotts. Don Knotts showed all of his comedic charm in his face. Tim Conway showed all his comedic charm in his physical comedy and his body language. And they made movies together. One of my favorites growing up was The Apple Dumpling Gang, a movie called Gus about a soccer-kicking donkey.
Oh, my.
Don't miss that. All those.
Why didn't we do that? Why didn't we do that movie?
And many, many more. He became notorious on The Carol Burnett Show, which he was a frequent guest and then a regular on, for making the cast members, especially co-star Harvey Korman, break up with laughter during the taping, which are so fun to watch. So if you care to look it up on YouTube, it's just a gem. And I lost many an hour today at work looking up videos of them together, especially Tim Conway, because he did the very good straight man,
uh-huh,
where he would be like making his co-hosts laugh and he was just like, I don't understand what's so funny. Like, he had that vibe about him, which just like egged him on even more. It was amazing.
I was just thinking about it and I was like, you know, Tim Conway, he has a very Charlie Chaplin vibe, like in this movie in particular.
And he does in a lot of his other movies too. And just an ode to his sense of humor about his success, because he was part of a lot of failed TV shows and sitcoms. And so when he got one of his new cars, His license plate read 13WKS, a reference to all of his solo television projects being canceled after 13 weeks.
Oh.
So he had a sense of humor about his failures, quote unquote, in life. And a lot of people may not know Tim Conway and his acting abilities, but some younger viewers might recognize the name because he was on the popular cartoon SpongeBob SquarePants.
Oh.
Together with Ernest Borgnine, they voiced the roles of Mermaid Man and Barnacle Boy for 13 years.
Wow, that's so cool. 13 yeah. weeks, 13 years. Nice.
Oh. And lastly, in 2004, Tim Conway was named a Disney legend.
Oh.
Because
nice.
He was.
He's like an everything legend. He was, in this movie, he was fucking genius.
Yes. And if you don't have time to watch the Carol Burnett sitcoms and shorts that they have, there is also a character that he did a lot of funny videos called Dorf that are just delightful. And it's a guy with unusually short legs. So his physical comedy shines through. He's like sitting on his knees and he's got tennis shoes on the bottom of his knees. Uh-huh. And the stuff that he does is just hilarious. I did not get anything done today at work. Nothing done today.
Thank you for taking us on the Tim Conway Odyssey.
It was almost like mourning him, even though I didn't know he was dead.
Well, I mean, we can't keep track of everybody dying, you know?
Yeah. Gosh. This is true.
Oh, so good. Tim Conway, you are also our Valentine.
Yes, yes, you are.
Aww. All right.
Shall we jump right in and be surprised by love, Corinne?
Ooh, I'm ready for the surprise. Are you an executive? Do you like to show how important you are and efficiently manage your time? Well, do I have an idea for you. Try exercising well on a business call. People will know that you value yourself, your health, you can multitask, and you show that you're the boss, because I can guarantee you, your underlings aren't going to be exercising while talking on the phone to you. Am I right? Eh? Eh?
I don't know. Those under-the-desk bikes are very popular nowadays.
Are you hinting? Is that really what you want for our second Christmas?
No. No, please. Please, no. I have hand weights that are right by my desk that are full of dust, so I am fairly confident I know exactly what's going to happen to that under desk bike.
I know I've watched a Hallmark movie and there's been a commercial for one of those like bikes that you can have in front of your couch. And I'm like, no.
I mean, how effective is that? It kind of puts me in mind of the Thighmaster, you know, like you're only working one little tiny part of your body. And how effective is that actually going to be?
I think the Thighmaster honestly would be more effective than like the tiny little pedal thing under your feet. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. Patreon idea number 36, Thighmaster versus couch bike.
Thighmaster is diabolical. Josie and several other executives we've seen in the movies has obviously seen this commercial. Perhaps it was a tip on the 27 Hour Day podcast, a fictitious podcast from our previous movie. I'm not sure, but Josie is jogging through the park and taking care of business on her Bluetooth headset.
Boss ass bitch.
Yeah. Just when she's clarifying that Havarti is the new Parmesan to the person she's on the phone with, some impressive driftwood sculptures catch her eye and stop her in her tracks. The guy selling the sculptures shouts across the lawn at her, "Don't stop there! What about Cheese Whiz?" Josie turns and checks out the guy and... OMGs! It's Gridley, her high school prom date. Gridley? She says with surprise. Oh my gosh, Josie! Wow, the last time we saw each other was high school? Josie responds. And you wore that shiny green tux for prom. My parents just about had an aneurysm when you came to pick me up. Gridley gets a far-off look in his eyes. Oh, but that tux was something special. Josie laughs. Special, shiny, and very green. Gridley smiles. Sure, but what I really remember about picking you up is seeing you at the top of the stairs in your dress, wearing flowers in your hair. "You were the prettiest girl I'd ever seen," he says with hearts in his eyes. She smiles softly back at him and then shifts the topic to him. "What are you up to? I've heard about you traveling everywhere." Ridley gestures to his Driftwood Creation stand on the grass next to the jogging path. "Do you want some Driftwood second Christmas Driftwood Creations, huh?"
No. Saying these things are impressive. Is that the word you use? No. They are barely sculptures. They're a bunch of sticks held together with twine and God knows what else. They're kind of creepy. And I went on a rambling diatribe about the poor props manager that had to put these things together because they're just a hot mess.
I'm impressed they managed to spell out Driftwood Creations with Driftwood.
In Driftwood, yeah. That was the most impressive part of his whole setup, is that he actually spelled Driftwood Creations in Driftwood. Everything else just looked like trash. Sorry, Gridley. Apologies, but damn.
I seriously want to be like, "So Paul Campbell, tell us about the Driftwood Creations. Did you craft any of those? Were those done as a prop? Was there actually a specific Driftwood artist that was called in for this whole thing?"
I hope not, because I was talking so much shit about it. And like, if there's somebody like on the off chance that they hear this and are crying quietly in a corner, like, "I really worked hard on those. Driftwood is a difficult medium. You have no idea."
It is. We believe you. Gridley says, "As you can tell, I've got an entrepreneurial spirit. Right now, I'm selling these handcrafted driftwood sculptures and house-sitting for 6 months. What about you? You've taken over the corporate world yet?" Josie shakes her head. "Nope, I'm still working for my dad at Mayfield's." "Hey, you want to exchange numbers?" Gridley looks at her and sighs, exasperated. "Hay's for horses, Denise." Well, if he'd been Whitley on the sitcom A Different World, he would have said that. But what he actually said was, "I don't have a phone. Like, none." Josie is taken aback. "Okay, well, you gonna be here tomorrow?" Gridley assures her that he will be. She says that she'll see him tomorrow, and they say goodbye, and she jogs off. Josie is back at work, wearing her suit and presenting a commercial for her company to assorted business folk, and most importantly, her dad, CEO and founder of Mayfield's. She has a vision, doing different vlogs, TikToks, etc., that share about her company and illustrate how useful their items can be. "Now, Josie, we're doing just fine without all those gimmicks," Josie's dad says. "He's nice, but most definitely not into progress or change." They wrap up the meeting and Josie and her dad walk and talk as they go down the hall. Mr. M says,
"I love your mock walking and talking scene." She's pantomiming walking saucily. She's moving her shoulders back and forth. She's getting shit done.
I'm pumping.
She's going places and getting shit done.
I am. "I am ready to walk this out CEO style." Josie's dad, who I will be calling Mr. M henceforth, says, "Are you coming to our anniversary celebration this weekend?" Josie responds, "Of course, Dad. Richard and I will be there." Mr. M's face falls. "Oh, you're bringing Richard?" Josie narrows her eyes. "I don't understand what your problem is with Richard. He's practically perfect in every way." Mr. M chuckles. "No, Josie, that's Mary Poppins. He is very pushy and talks a lot."
He's kind of an asshole.
And an asshole, yes.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm an asshole.
I'm going to be going into in just a moment, too. I don't mind.
Sorry.
No. I'm seconding that. I'm just saying on my end, I will be going into it in just a moment. But I'm here to sit for your asshole TED Talk right now. I would love to hear
I just wanted to dive into the asshole pool first. Be like, "He's an asshole."
Yes. There.
I said it. That's my piece. That's all you need to know. And he will prove himself to be an asshole throughout this movie.
Yes, he will. Mm-hmm. Josie rolls her eyes. "Is there anyone I could bring home that you'd approve of?" Mr. M stops walking and says, "I guess you'll always just be my little girl." And they part ways. And I say barf. Barf, 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 barf. "I'm sorry, but my daughter's supposed to be a virgin forever because she's always going to be my little girl." Nobody's asking you to have sex with your daughter. Nobody wants you to have sex with your daughter. You just need to let other people have sex with your daughter.
Okay.
When Josie gets to her office, lo and behold, there is the aforementioned Richard standing in her corner office, looking at the view while waiting for her. Is he there for a romantic reason, perhaps to take her out to lunch? Did he bring flowers? Does he, like, do anything sweet for her? Tamara is shaking her head. No.
Nope. Not that. Nope. Not that either. Mm-mm, nope. Definitely didn't do that.
Josie is puzzled. Hi, Richard. What are you doing here? He approaches her and gives her a dry peck on the lips. So sexy. Well, I missed you. And I need 5 minutes with your dad. He's not returning my calls. Okay. Yeah. So you're not using Josie or anything for her connection with her father, right?
I'm nodding now. I'm nodding. Yes. Yes, that's what's happening.
I'm like, this, gentle listeners, is why I do not give a fuck if she has an emotional affair with Gridley later, because this motherfucker is just using her. No.
Usually we have a problem with those emotional affairs, but not this time.
Not this time.
Richard is the worst.
Yes. Her parents are right to openly despise Richard.
Yeah.
When it's
especially
like,
especially after what he does next.
I know, when it's like, oh, it's the nice guy back at home, you know, who you know, you're out of town and you meet, like, you see your ex-boyfriend and you fall in love, or but you have this, like, really nice guy back at home. I'm like, wrap things up on the other end, will ya? But this one, I'm like, how come you haven't hopped into bed with each other yet? So, getting ahead of myself. I'm back. I'm focused. We're in Josie's office. We're with Richard, who is using her for her parental connections. And
we're all thinking about Paul Campbell.
And we're all thinking about Paul Campbell Gridley. Our Valentine. Josie groans. Oh, seriously, Richard, you need to chill out. Please stop pitching my dad. I really want him to like you, and right now he's not a fan. Oh, she very, very clearly stated her needs. So he's going to follow through with that, right?
Don't look at me. I have a big screen TV in my living room that I did not ask for.
My heart. Okay, I laugh so hard I'm seeing the stars now. Okay.
You're laughing at my pain, Corinne.
With the most useless remote ever.
The remote has no numbers. It has 3 buttons, up, down, and stop. Okay. It only takes 22 minutes to get to channel 1076.
Richard assures Josie, don't worry, I'll be charming. Richard is a recruiter and he believes that he has found the perfect employee for Mayfield. Josie shakes her head and switches the topic. Hey, when do you want to get together next? Richard and Josie look at their calendars and schedule a lunch several days out. With another dry peck on the lips, such passion. Richard heads out to place more employees with their perfect position. As Richard is waiting for the elevators, he sees Mr. M from a distance about to head out of the office towards the bank of elevators. When the elevator doors open, Richard dashes in, swipes his hand across all the floor buttons, steps back, and waits. Mr. M innocently walks into the elevator, sees Richard, and thinks, oh, shit. If I had been him, I would have been like, oh, I think I left something back at the office. And I just would have.
Especially after he saw all the buttons that were pushed on the elevator, I'd be like, oh, fuck this noise. I'm out. I'm sorry.
Exactly.
You can ride this elevator for 20 minutes. I'm going to get the next one.
Yeah. Or if I wasn't thinking when I get to the next floor, I'm going to pop on out of there. But you know who will pop on out with you? Richard, too. He'll be like, oh, what was I thinking? I should get out, too. Fucker. Fucker.
Fuck politeness.
Oof, no kidding. So, as Tamara says, when Mr. M turns to face the door, he sees all the stop buttons for each of the floors lit up and lets out an exasperated sigh. Did you swipe all of the elevator buttons just so that you could talk to me? Who, me? No, Richard says, feigning innocence. It was some kid playing a prank. There are so many children running around office buildings. Let me tell you, it's just a hazard. Mr. M sighs again. Ugh. Mr. M is one of the most beleaguered men in history. The elevator door closes, and we hear Richard say, "I'd really like to run something by you." We assume that he painstakingly pitches Mr. M the entire way down, stopping on every floor. As soon as the ground floor elevator doors open, Mr. M rushes out of the elevator with Richard trailing behind. "So is next week good?" he says, but Mr. M is done and speed walks off, leaving Richard in a trail of motherfucking dust.
He's the worst. The worst. He's climbing the charts of the worstedness. The next day, Josie's taking her regular route, still talking into her phone earpiece. And there, as promised, is Gridley working on his next masterpiece. "You still working?" he asks. And she tells him no. "My parents are having an anniversary party this weekend, and I'm just helping with party prep." He charmingly says, "Oh, tell them I said hi. You know what? Never mind. Why ruin their day?" He has a hunk of wood in front of him, and they stand there and try to figure out what the piece is trying to be. Gridley thinks camel, but Josie tells him not to limit his clientele. No one's in the market for a camel. They both decide it could be a horse, and Josie excitedly tells him that her boyfriend is a member of a polo club and that hunk of wood would look great in their reception area. Would it though?
I would just love to have him go into the reception area every time and see a giant driftwood creation there, because it would tickle me to no end, because I'd be like, ha ha! Ha ha!
That driftwood creation looked like it just washed up to shore, and that's about it. Like, that's the extent of the work it looks like got done on it. It's so...
It was very tall.
Okay, great. It had that going for it then.
Yeah.
The tall sculpture. Uh-huh. Right. Gridley seems surprised that Josie has a boyfriend and asks for the deets. She shares that he's a headhunter, and her dad doesn't particularly like him.
Gee, I wonder why.
Oh, I don't know. Something about elevators and being an asshole, apparently. Huh. Gridley remembers that he wasn't very popular with her parents either. Josie says, "Don't feel bad. Richard checks all my parents' boxes, but he's still not good enough." "Ah, yes. I remember those boxes. Good family, good job, etc., etc. But I don't blame them," Gridley shrugs. "What father wants their daughters dating a cannibal?" "He's not a cannibal," she corrects, chuckling. "He's a headhunter." Gridley asks, "What's the difference?" And Josie informs him that headhunters place people in employment positions and cannibals eat each other for food. He smiles. Tomato, tomato. Just as a little bastard kid runs up and steals the pasta fork from his beloved sundial that he just finished and runs away.
I'm pretty sure that Richard eats souls, so, you know.
Richard eats souls.
Yes.
Can you imagine working for him?
Ugh, forget it.
But again, back to the kid. Why would the kid steal the spoon from the sundial with all of those sticks around? It was like a wooden pasta spoon. I can't imagine that like a 7-year-old little boy would need a wooden pasta spoon specifically.
Yeah, well, it makes a lot more sense than a fake child swapping his fingers along all of the elevator buttons. It's just a prank of grabbing some low-hanging fruit, the one like sticking up thing that looks a little bit different.
That's just a testament then to all the driftwood creations that are supposed to be so phenomenal that kid goes after the spoon, not the driftwood, not the sculptures. He's like, fuck this noise, I need the spoon here that he did not create. And it's not driftwood, incidentally.
It is wood, and it's like, it looks fucking expensive, and I'm all, really? Really, Paul Campbell? I mean, Gridley, the spoon makes no sense. We'll get into it. Go ahead.
He's supposed to be working with found objects, and instead he's using a sundial that is an expensive wooden spoon that probably costs in excess of $20. Is that what you meant to say, Corinne?
Yes, and I think that they could have had, which you haven't gotten to yet, they could have had fucking Josie bring him a wooden spoon, even if it had been driftwood that the child had stolen, you know.
Well, you're in luck. Because... That night, Josie is eating dinner, still at her desk in her office. She gets a call from her mother, Claire, who I'm going to call Ma Mayfield, leaves a message saying, "Please don't bring Richard to dinner. Your father had an unfortunate incident with him in the elevator." Josie huffs as she shovels takeout into her mouth and thinks to herself, "If only they'd give him a chance." The next day, Claire and Richard are in the park again. Richard thought they were going to lunch, but Claire is taking him on a small detour. "My friend over here makes driftwood sculptures, and I think one would look great in your office." He's confused, and she adds, "Come on. He's kind of lost and I want to help him out. Will you just take a look?" He agrees and she leads him over to Gridley's sculpture garden. They make introductions. Richard seems a little bit intimidated by him, especially after hearing about him and Josie's history, and refuses to shake Gridley's hand. Gridley offers them and the assholiness continues. Gridley offers them sun tea, and I said this before and I will say it again. Sun tea is an unfortunate choice in the middle of the park, because when I'm in a park and I see a large jar of brownish yellow liquid with things floating in it, the last thing I am is thirsty.
Yes. Oh, but I will say, you do have one thing in common with Richard. Only one thing. Only one thing.
I was going to say, I'm waiting. I'm ready to be offended. My shoulders are up.
You won't be offended. The one thing that you have in common with Richard is how much you detest those driftwood creations. Because Richard is not a fan either.
I know, but my criticism is valid. I am an art student. I've taken art for many, many years. Richard's just an asshole. We're in completely different leagues.
I didn't say that you were like twins. I just said you had one thing in common.
I don't even want that. One is too many. One thing is one too many.
You know how it's you remind me of Richard, actually? No, I'm just kidding.
Oh my God. I'm turning. Oh gosh. I lost reception. Cringe. Oh, wait, I can't do that because we're video chatting. And no one else wants any of Gridley's tea either. And Josie asks to see his horse sculpture. He apologizes. "I know we said it should be a horse, but I had to listen to my heart." He takes him over to a covered bundle and grandly pulls the tarp off to show a pile of sticks, which is supposed to be a camel. "But," he adds enthusiastically, "you can help me decide whether I should have one hump or two." Josie pipes up, "Two, it's more dramatic." And he agrees. All of Gridley and Josie's interactions are easy and lighthearted. And this is not how Richard operates, nor is it interesting to him, so he tries to usher Josie away. Gridley tells him, "Have fun at your parents' party over the weekend." And jokingly advises, "Richard, don't wear a green tux. They hate that." Richard discloses, "I'm not even invited to the party." And Josie said sadly, "Yeah, and I might not even go either." "You can't do that," Gridley argues. "There's no coming back from that. Your parents will totally blame him if you don't go." Josie agrees, but they're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't. Josie remembers that she brought something and hands Gridley a bag. It's a replacement spoon stolen by that asshole kid for his sundial, and an extra spoon for a second hand. He accepts them graciously, and just as they're about to walk away, Richard gets an idea. "Say, you know what would make your parents roll out the red carpet for me? If you take him to the anniversary dinner." He points at Gridley with a devious grin on his face. Josie and Gridley are dumbfounded. "Don't you see?" Richard continues. "If they think I'm not right for you, what if you bring home somebody really wrong?" "No offense," he says to Gridley, who shrugs. "No," Josie says. "I am not comfortable with this, and this puts him in an awkward position." "Okay, okay." Richard relents. "It was just an idea." But Gridley interjects, "It's actually pretty brilliant. I mean, your parents still hate me. I'll do it." Richard is thrilled and Josie's confused. "Are you sure?" she asks. "I don't want to put you out." "Nah, it's fine," he confirms as he checks his imaginary schedule and throws it in the air. "I'm free. I don't have anything going on this weekend." Richard, being the ever-loving asshole, beelines over and tries to put a couple $100 in Gridley's hands. "For gas," he says, but he shoves it back. "Oh, no thank you. My car runs on vegetable oil." So then he shoves it back into his hand again and says, "Well then, here's the money for vegetable oil." But Gridley won't take it. "The Chinese food across the street gives it to me for free." And with that, the plans are set. Gridley's going to be Josie's date, and they're driving in his Chinese food chariot to their old hometown.
Ooh. Okay, I've got two things.
Okay.
First, did you notice what he decided was a camel? It was huge.
Yeah.
But it didn't really look like much of anything.
No.
However, off to the side, there was a tiny little driftwood creation of a camel, and it was very clearly a camel. Did you notice that?
No.
Yeah.
You didn't make me watch that movie for a tenth time to see the camel that actually looks like a camel.
Yeah, it was like that big. Uh-huh.
Okay, I'll do it for you and sweet baby Jesus. I thought for you, like, two things. I'm like, so help me God if you say there's another thing that reminds me and Richard have in common. So help me God.
You know how else you and Richard are very similar?
When you get mad, you make that face. It looks just like his face.
You breathe oxygen. Can you believe it? The second thing was, oh, yeah. I was like, okay, so what's Gridley's motivation for being like, well, yes, I will go and be the schlub to piss off Josie's parents. And I'm like, you are diabolical, Gridley, because
yes,
I think you've got your eyes on a little someone. Winky, winky.
Yeah, they were like walking away kind of arm in arm. And he saw that when he was like, I'll do it. And I'm just like, oh, because yeah. It's like that little interaction and the touchy feely that changed his mind and sweet his heart.
He's like, I get to spend the weekend with Josie. Thinking really hard here.
They had a really cute dynamic, like, all throughout this movie. They seem like they had a lot of fun together.
Yeah. So, Gridley and Josie hop in Gridley's vegetable oil-powered truck and drive out to wherever the fuck they live, in whatever city, in whatever state. Gridley and Josie make a grand entrance to Mr. and Mrs. M's house in Gridley's vegetable oil-converted trunk, honking as they pull up. Josie opens the front door to her parents' house, shouting, we're here! And Mr. and Mrs. M come out, thrilled to see Josie, greeting her and giving her hugs. Then they hear a voice off to the side. Mr. and Mrs. M, happy 50th! Josie corrects. 40th. Gridley plays it off. No matter the years, you're still together and still happy. Mrs. M is appalled by the scruffy, bearded man in a t-shirt in her foyer. Who is this? She says. Josie responds, Gridley from high school, remember? Mr. M responds tersely, vividly. Mr. M looks out at Gridley's truck in the driveway. Your truck is leaking oil. Mrs. M chimes in, and I keep on smelling Chinese food? Gridley claps Mr. M on the shoulder. No worries. It's vegetable oil. Hose it down with water and it'll come right off. And you've got a keen nose, Mrs. M. That's probably me. Nanking Gardens. Great restaurant. Mrs. M has had enough. Okay, well, thanks so much for driving up, Josie. Here's some gas money for your trip home. Josie smiles tightly. No, Mom. Gridley is staying here with us this weekend. He's my plus one. Mr. and Mrs. M look at each other with undisguised horror, while Gridley smiles broadly and puts his arm around Josie, pulling her closer to him. While Gridley goes out to his truck to grab their luggage, Mr. and Mrs. M express their what-the-fuckitude at the whole thing to Josie. Josie explains that since they didn't approve of Richard, she started seeing other people and has put Richard on the back burner. She ran into Gridley while she was jogging and, hey, he makes her laugh. And as we all know, gentle listeners, the number one requirement for any successful heteronormative relationship is a man who can make a woman laugh. Ha 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 ha. I always personally say, I don't need a man who can make me laugh because I'm funny enough on my own. Thank you very much.
I make myself laugh.
Exactly. Ugh. While Josie is being grilled inside, Gridley is outside grabbing stuff from the truck. When Mindy, Josie's younger sister, pulls up, she'd been running an important errand, buying grape scissors for her mom. Lord knows we all need specific grape scissors. Yeah? Yeah? Tamara's shaking her head no once again and has a look of horror in her eyes. What's going on there?
Did not even know that was a thing. You know what I call my grape scissors?
What?
A knife. Oh. We call it a knife.
I call them scissors because they're just scissors.
When do you need to cut, unless you have toddlers that could potentially choke, when do you need to cut grapes in half?
No, you don't cut the grapes in half. You cut the little vine part. It's for cutting the vine part.
Oh, shit. Now I want one.
If you use scissors, it'll do the same thing as grape scissors. Pro tip.
Oh, winds up already half grape scissors. Yeah. Right on.
Mindy waves at the hunky next door neighbor, Wade Wilson, but he doesn't see her. She's disappointed and turns towards the house when she sees Gridley pop out of the back of his truck. They're both super happy to see each other and they head to the house. Ta-da!
In the foyer, or foyer if you're fancy, of the house, Mindy and Josie excitedly greet each other and hug.
I'm the fancy one of the duo. So yeah, fancy. You are.
Foyer. Grape scissors. You're just too bougie for me, Corinne. I think I'm going to need to retire from ODK. It's getting way too uppity for me.
Look, when you're part of the elite class like I grew up as.
We grew up with the house away from each other. It's like, wasn't on the other side of town. There weren't railroad tracks in the middle of our yards.
Can you imagine if there was like literally railroad tracks between our houses?
We would have died. No. We would have died playing chicken with that train.
Oh, seriously. You know how many coins we would have put on those rails hoping that it would get like smushed?
Or Barbie dolls. Oh. Or Tonka trucks. The possibilities are endless. Mindy whispers, guess who's in town? Wade Wilson. Oh, Chelsea hisses excitedly. Invite him over. Invite him over. Tell him to come to the party. Her sister scoffs. Oh, I can't do that. Mom would kill me. Gridley comes in behind them and exclaims, wow, Mrs. M, this place is even better than I remember. He sees a shiny green bauble on the table and asks, hey, what's this? But before he can even get close to it, Claire commands, don't touch that. It's very expensive. If it's so expensive, Mom Mayfield, what is it doing on a low glass table that could be bumped or tripped or nudged by a dog? Asking for a friend. Josie informs him that it's a Fabergé egg that her father gave to her mother on their second anniversary. Claire sourly adds, we were too poor on our first anniversary. Ooh. I will, Gridley says cheerily. Poor in money, rich in love, am I right? Just then he notices Rex still lying on the carpet a ways away from the group and kneels down. Hey, who's this guy? Rex's tail thunks softly on the ground and Claire tells him, he's new. We just got him. She then proceeds to call, Rex, Rex, come here. Rex, come here, boy. The dog remains laying, uncertainly thunking his tail. After a few feeble attempts, she shrugs. Ugh, he just doesn't like people. Just as she utters this, Rex gets up, goes over to Gridley, and starts licking his face.
Yeah.
Much to Claire's chagrin. Josie, sensing the tempers in the room are rising, leads Gridley away. They go into the kitchen where her granddad is sitting and still watching a game show. Gridley remembers him. Oh, hey, hello, sir. You took me fishing once. No response. So Gridley goes over and parks his rear next to him on the couch. Pa and Ma Mayfield come in, probably to make sure Gridley doesn't touch anything else. As Granddad and him continue watching TV. Oh, hey, hey, I know the answer to this. I know the answer, Gridley says to the game show. Granddad is watching, but before he can answer, Claire takes the remote and turns the TV off while Gridley mumbles, who's William Howard Taft?
He got stuck in the bathtub.
He doesn't talk. Ma Mayfield says sourly. Oh, okay, Gridley nods. He's taking a vow of silence? No, she huffs. Dementia. But something happens to Granddad as they're talking. He seems to come to life and takes a genuine interest in Gridley and gives him a once-over. But nobody notices because Claire produces a tray of champagne and announces that she has secured the coveted Beautiful Homes page in the Sunday Chronicle.
Ooh.
Wow, Josie marvels. You've wanted that forever. Or at least, Dad mumbles, annoyed, since the Wilsons got it last year.
Ugh.
Oh, the Wilsons, Gridley recalls. They still live next door? Yes, Claire mutters, unfortunately. She hands champagne to everyone, and Gridley takes a flute for Granddad. He doesn't drink, Ma Mayfeld says, just as Granddad shotguns the glass. Claire snorts angrily, puts the tray back on the kitchen counter, and informs everyone the photographer will be here tomorrow, and things need to be perfect. Gridley raises his glass for a toast and says, to the Mayfields! Mindy adds, to Josie and Gridley! And the parents promptly put their glasses down because they're not fucking drinking to that. Gridley, still upbeat in spite of the parents' shitty attitude, exclaims, oh, I completely forgot I bought you all gifts! He goes to his handbag still by the door and rifles around until he pulls out a dollar store plastic bag. Josie stands behind him and assures him that's not necessary, Gridley. But he's undeterred. He pulls out four newspaper-wrapped bundles. The first he hands to Mindy. It's a green knit hat. I remember that was your favorite color, he says happily as she puts it on. Thanks, Gridley. Ma Mayfeld gingerly unwraps hers, and it's a calendar of dogs.
Aww.
I thought you'd like it, he says, just as she bursts into emotional tears. It looks like Prince, she sobs and rushes out of the room. Josie, somewhat apologetically, tells him that Prince was her mother's dog that died last year. Gridley, a little remorseful, is sure his next gift will be a hit. He turns his attention to Pa Mayfeld, whose package is a slinky. Pa jostles it a few times and then puts it on the table, unimpressed. Just as Claire comes in with the vase of flowers, while Rex starts rooting around Gridley's bag. He tries to pull the dog out just as Mom Mayfeld walks behind him, and oh fucking shit! He accidentally trips her, causing her to stumble backwards and pour face water all over Mindy and her new hat. What nobody notices in the hustle is the Fabergé egg falls to the floor and rolls away. Mindy takes off the soaking hat to reveal a green head. Ooh. Ah, the dye in the cheap hat ran when it got wet. Claire shrieks in horror, and Pa Mayfeld asks for a moment alone with his family, a.k.a. get the fuck out of here, Gridley, and he does. He takes the last package to Granddad in the next room, and it's a stuffed, mounted, singing bass for the fisherman and us all. He opens it up and explains, it turns on, much to Granddad's amusement. And as it sings, way down upon the Swanee River, Granddad tries to hold its tail still. And as he does that, the head flops out and practically lands in Granddad's mouth. Good time had by all due to a stuffed fish.
I felt like they were very thoughtful gifts.
Thoughtful gifts, yes, but bringing them in a dollar store bag wrapped in newspaper was kind of just a little, you know, like a little like F you to the fam, because
yeah,
like as uppity as they are, I just like, I felt like, I don't know, that yeah, just kind of seemed.
Gridley's gonna Gridley. And on top of it, my uncle Tim, he used to wrap his gifts in newspaper, and he would always wrap me and Bridget's gifts in the comics page.
He used to wrap my presents in newspapers too, Mayboon and Marley's and Life in Hell.
Uh-huh.
See, if you're gonna wrap them in newspaper, at least make it the good section. That's all I'm saying, Corinne.
Well, you maybe that she used the business section for the slinky and the lifestyle section for the calendar and the sporting section for the fishy and the style section for the hat.
Okay, yeah. Noted. Noted.
That evening, the family is sitting around the dining room table, and Gridley, the unsophisticated ingrate of them all, bows his head respectfully to pray when Mrs. M opens by saying, let's dig in. Bon appetit. Gridley bops his head up. This was not what he was expecting, but shrugs and digs in with everyone else. Over dinner, Mrs. M is on a tear of disdain. She's not happy about Mindy's green hair and food shames her for eating a dinner roll.
Damn.
I am like, fuck the fuck off.
And she's skinny. It's not even like, oh, honey, you've put on a few pounds. I'm like, she could stand to eat about three or four of those rolls. Mrs. M, you need to back the fuck up.
And even if she had put on a few pounds, she can still eat if she wants to eat a fucking roll, yeah, like, eat a fucking roll.
Oh, no, I'm not. That's not justification at all, but oof. Just if, ugh.
Yes. Hey, ugh. Yes. Gridley gamely tries smoothing things over by grabbing the rolls and saying, more for me and Granddad. Granddad grabs a few more rolls, making a small pile of them in front of his plate. Mrs. M is concerned about what Gridley will wear for the party.
Oh, don't you worry about that, Mrs. M. I won't embarrass you. I learned my lesson from prom, Gridley says amiably.
Mindy titters.
Mr. and Mrs. M make, I can't believe we're having to deal with this, eyes across the table the at horror, each other.
The horror.
Mrs. M says, fortunately, Mr. Mayfield will be able to lend you a suit jacket, shirt, and tie. Mr. M is making subtle digs at Mrs. M's dry game hen, and the whole meal is fucking awkward. Gridley tries to smooth things over with his positive disposition, but his positivity gets sucked into the black hole of judgment that is Mr. and Mrs. M. Mr. M asks, so, what do you do? Gridley smiles. Well, there's not enough time in the day for me to do everything I'd like, but I create driftwood sculptures, do topiary, as well as teach water aerobics. The tight-lipped, that Mr. M says everything we need to know about what he thinks about that. Mr., what'd you think of dinner?
I don't want to be in that house. Watching it on the outside, I'm just like, so uncomfortable. So, like, just rigid and serious and too concerned about appearances. Blech. Now I'm trying to think if I've ever been in an uppity house that I really wanted to leave, but nope. Either that or just blocked it out.
You're like thinking about all your interactions at my house being like, okay, how uncomfortable was I that time? No.
That was about a 6. This dinner was about a 10.
Yeah. This was a fucking 10 weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It's the morning after the disaster dinner and Mr. M is being dismissive of Mrs. M. Per usual. She brings him breakfast and he kind of grumbles her off. We see up on the counter a giant 3-tiered pink monstrosity of a cake adorned on the top with several stargazer lilies. It's Mrs. M's famous dulce de leche cake. That cake is a big deal. I love that look on your face. Tamara looks almost like she's frozen in sheer horror.
Just wondering if the dulce de leche cake is like tres leches cake, which is kind of gross.
I know.
And I'm like, that if it's made with as much milk and moisture as the tres leches cake, like it would not be able to be that big. It would collapse into a milky heap.
I think it's probably only uno leche cake, so so it's not as dense, but I'm guessing it's still milky. I have had tres leches cake twice, and the first time I was like, wow, I really don't like this cake. And then the second time, because of someone that I know, they were like, tres leches cake is the best cake ever. I love tres leches cake. It's the best. And I was like, oh, okay. Maybe I just haven't tasted the right tres leches cake, Dan. All right.
I was like, yeah, I know you're looking at me when you say that, but I know that I did not tell you that it's the best cake.
You were just quiet. You didn't say, if you had been like, I'm not really into tres leches cake, but instead you were like, oh, yeah, you know, kind of.
I've had some good tres leches cake. Like, I had a mocha one that was pretty decent and a strawberry one that was decent. But the tres leches without the secondary, like, flavoring.
Yeah. No, it just tasted kind of like cake in old cereal milk. Like, it wasn't my thing. And for all those who love tres leches cake, yay for you. Enjoy it. You can have my piece.
Yeah. All I'm saying is once you eat a piece of cake, there shouldn't be milky residue on the bottom of your plate.
Mr. and Mrs. M's early morning serenity is broken when Gridley bounds in from the outside. I was just about to take Rex for a walk, he announces. Mrs. M doesn't approve. She doesn't want Rex to get dirty and tries calling Rex in from outside. Come here, Rex. Come on, boy. Rex, come. But Rex just pants, staring blankly up at Mrs. M from the backyard. Gridley helps. Come on, Rex. Rex bounds up to Gridley enthusiastically, knocking Gridley back into the pink horror show of a cake. The cake flies from the counter and slams to the floor. It's absolutely destroyed. Rex runs off instead of digging in because he is just that afeared of Mrs. M. And Mrs.
Or he's not a fan of the dulce de leche cake.
Dulce de leche cake. He's like,
who the hell eats that roof?
Gridley has spoken. No dulce de leche cake. I just think it was such an interesting choice of a cake, too. Like, this super white upper crust household is like, and here's my signature dulce de leche cake. Like, really?
She okay. wants to prove that she's of the people.
Yeah, because I gotta tell you, the diversity in this movie is fucking amazing.
The diversity is the cake. That's about it.
Yes, totally true.
Mrs. M gasps in horror. My cake, what have you done? At first, Gridley objects. It wasn't me, it was... He trails off, realizing that Rex has to live here, and he doesn't, so resigns himself to full blame. I'm sorry, it was totally me. I'll fix this. Give me an hour, two tops, he says, picking up cake chunks. Mrs. M is not having it. That's my signature cake. It took half the night for me to create. Mr. M rolls his eyes at his wife. Claire, call Village Bakery. I'm sure they can do something. Mrs. M, not one for hyperbole, says, oh, wait, I have an even better idea. Why don't I go to McDonald's and pick up their apple pies and just hand them out to guests? They are pocket-sized, after all. Mrs. M leaves the room, highly distressed, with Mr. M following after her and Gridley and Josie picking up cake from the floor. Gridley glances at Josie with a smile. You have any idea on how we can salvage this? Josie laughs. Don't look at me. I can't even use a lemon squeezer. But fear not, gentle listeners. Gridley's brain hamster is tireless, and it was working that wheel for ideas when suddenly it all came together. Light bulb goes off over Gridley's head, and next thing we know, Gridley is piling boxes and boxes of Twinkies into Josie's arms from the back of his truck. Josie says, did you buy these from a guy in an alley? Gridley shakes his head. Nah, there was a great sale at the Food Max. I bought an entire flat of them. You never know when there will be a Twinkie emergency. They go back to the kitchen and start layering the Twinkies, making a similarly shaped Twinkie cake to the hot pink dulce de leche cake, with frosting layers between each row of Twinkies. But this cake is a dignified white. Josie and Gridley laugh and reminisce while layering Twinkies. Gridley glances up. Hey, is that the tree I, Josie laughs. TP'd. Gridley looks over, surprised. You knew? Josie responds. Yeah, I knew, but my parents blamed Wade Wilson for years. Per Hallmark cooking rules, they're about to get into a frosting fight when Josie's iPad starts ringing. Stop, 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 stop! The phone's ringing! She bounds over and answers it. Richard, hi! Josie says giddily. Richard looks at her suspiciously. How are things going? Josie responds, great! They hate him! Richard can see Gridley several feet behind Josie in the kitchen, and Gridley chimes in, yeah, they hate me! And then he throws a Twinkie at Josie. Hey, stop! She says playfully, glancing back at Gridley. She turns back to Richard, smiling broadly. I've got to go. We have to finish making the cake for Mom. Bye! And she closes the cover of the iPad hanging up on him. Richard is concerned.
He should be. After they doctor the cake, Gridley once again tries to go for a walk. When he comes into the living room, oddly enough, the Singing Mouth Bass is right next to Granddad, and Pop Mayfield is playing with the Slinky absently as he reads the paper. Curious.
Ooh.
He asks if anyone wants to join him around the block. Pa Mayfield says no, and Gridley proposes that he take Rex. Mr. M says he won't go, so Gridley offers to take Granddad. He won't go either. So Gridley decides to hoof it alone. At least it starts out that way, because as he leaves, Rex gets up and follows after him. And after a few minutes more, Grandpa stands up and shuffles after them both. Outside, the three bachelors are walking down the street. Gridley tells Granddad about growing up by the gas station. It wasn't the most glamorous address, but we did have great big trees. Oak, I think. Granddad is listening intently and corrects him. Those are sycamore trees. And good call with the William H. Taft. Gridley's mouth drops. open. I thought you couldn't talk, he says, surprised. Dementia? Nope, Grandpa responds. I'm sharp as a tack. I just don't talk so I can tune everyone out. Gridley thinks this is hilarious, but then second guesses his amusement. But what about Mindy and Josie, he asks. Oh, Granddad waves his hand. Collateral damage. I'll make it up to him in my will. And by the way, I'd like to keep this on the down low. Gridley's lips are sealed. He thinks he has an ally and is about to probe him for all the Mayfield family skeletons in the closet. But Granddad inexplicably tells him, time to head back. About faces, and they walk back to the house silently.
That was so funny when he's just like, okay, we're turning around now. He's just like, yeah. Whoop. He's
just like, about faces, like, we're going home. Bloop.
And Gridley's like, okay. Like, he's like, I was going to walk more, but never mind. We're going back.
We just started talking. I want this moment to last. Damn it. Okay. Meanwhile, at the house, Mindy and Josie are rearranging the deck chairs by the pool in the backyard. Why are we doing this? Mindy asks. Because the party's inside. And Josie tells her, in case somebody looks out the window. Gridley is back from the walk and he jumps in to help out. Just as he and Josie are moving another chair, she offers him Richard's services. If he ever wants to get a serious job and take a break from all the driftwood sculptures. But Gridley lives life on his own terms. Thanks her for the offer. Probably won't take her up on it. And instead goes to Mindy and apologizes for the green hair. She laughs. Actually, I lied. The color does come out, but I like it. It makes me feel like a different person. Josie's perplexed. Why would you want to be a different person? She asks. Are you kidding me? Mindy counters. I know I'm the black sheep of the family. Gridley, who's wandered away to give them a little bit of privacy, chimes in. Or the green sheep. You know what I mean, Mindy continues. You're the favorite, and I'm the disappointment. You're young, Josie tells her. You're not supposed to know what you're doing yet. But you did, she counters. You graduated and went straight into the family business. Well, once you leave college, Josie begins, but Mindy cuts her off. I dropped out last year. She barrels through the rest of her confession, ignoring the shock on her sister's face. Please don't tell Mom and Dad. I have a job. I sing in a coffee shop, and that's what I want to do. Stupid as it sounds, I want to sing. The shocked look on Josie's face is replaced with one of concern. Why didn't you tell me? She asks. Mindy sheepishly looks down. Because I thought you'd be disappointed. This prompts her sister to take both hands in hers and articulate, I am not our parents. Aww. I'll support you no matter what you decide to do. And you're a great singer. Yeah, Gridley agrees, finally coming back over. I remember all those old standards we used to do. Won't you come home, Bill Bailey? Won't you come home? Yeah, Mindy remembers, but I was 8. Just then, a football flies over the fence, startling all of them. It came from the Wilson's house and was thrown by the Wade Wilson, Mindy's Ooh. Crush, who is making his way over to their shared hedge. She stammers, what do I do? What do I do? Gridley hands her the football and says, whatever your mom would do, do the opposite. She nervously takes the ball back over the fence where Wade is waiting. She hands him the ball and he compliments her hair. She shyly touches it and thanks him as he looks over her shoulder. Is that Gridley? He asks. She confirms it is and he complains, that guy got me blamed for TP in your house. Which makes her laugh and they chat easily as Gridley leads Josie away, saying quietly, let's give these kids some privacy. As they walk around to the side of the house, they pass the garbage cans and recycling bins. And there, peeking out of the lid is, could it be? No. Not after all these years. It's, and we'll find out right after this break. It's a dead body. It's Grandma. Nope, actually, inside the waste bins is a large pink bakery box, and written on the corner of it, clear as day, is Dulce de Leche. Are you kidding me? Josie says incredulously. All these years, my mom pretended like she baked this, and the whole time she was buying it, I can't believe it. Then she thinks about it for a beat and corrects herself. Actually, I can. Gridley suggests they put the box back in the bin, and upon doing so, accidentally knocks the recycling bin, causing a huge racket. Claire, who's upstairs, hears this, comes out of the second floor balcony and hollers, "Hey, who's down there? What's going on?" Josie and Gridley are pressed against the wall of the house trying to hide before he calls back in a high-pitched crack voice, "It's me, Wade Wilson!" And they both erupt into giggles and race away from the scene of the crime.
Josie and Gridley scamper away from the dulce de leche cake evidence and end up dropping by their old stomping grounds, Maplewood High. Josie shimmies in through an open computer lab window and runs around the side door, opening it for Gridley. Why did they have them go through a computer lab window? Who's going to leave a computer lab window unlocked? Hey, you know what the priciest thing is in the school? This computer lab. Let's just leave the windows open.
Oh, I know. Oh, sure. Okay, that happens. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Well, the janitor was there. Maybe that's why. You know, he's practically security. He's going to stop anybody from coming in and doing anything to those gosh darn computers.
So my mom was a teacher for many years, and fun fact, schools have security systems. But if you live in an area where your school might get broken into a lot and the alarm just keeps on, you know, going off on a fairly regular basis, the police will stop showing up to the school.
Ah, mm-hmm. Anybody that's got nefarious plans, forget you heard that. That's not the case. The police are going to come. Don't break into a school and steal computers.
Yes.
I remember how much they freaking locked up the sports equipment in all Shepherd Middle.
Oh, yeah.
So I can imagine the fucking computers were practically padlocked to the desk.
You know what? I never even thought of that. The computers were padlocked to the desks in the schools that I went to, but literally. But I never even thought of that. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Ah,
like the balls were in a locked box with metal. A padlock inside a closet that was locked.
Yes.
Padlocked. It's like multiple layers. Nobody's touching these balls. These balls are important.
Like somebody was going to be coming in and stealing those basketballs.
I was going to say, we need to discuss this with your mother because maybe the faculty knows something that we don't. Somebody's going to break into the computer lab, much like Josie and Gridley did. See, fuck these. Where are the balls at? We don't need no stinking computers. Where are the basketballs and the volleyballs and the dodgeballs?
What's in those balls? Diamonds?
Cocaine?
Oh. In the school, they take a walk down memory lane, find their old prom committee photo in the nerd trophy case, and we find out more about what Gridley did after high school, including a singular year at MIT, a dead mom, and a bevy of odd jobs that included a treacherous lobster boat. Josie apologizes for her parents being elitist assholes. She says, Tam's like, yes, elitist
fair.
Assholes. Mm.
Yeah.
She says, they were wrong about you then, and they're wrong now. He accepts her apology. Then they hear the janitor starting to unlock the door, and they dash out. That's the kind of music that was just like playing throughout. And that's what played when they were like running out the door. It's wacky. I said, cue wacky Charleston-esque music.
I thought you were doing a Super Mario Brothers for a second.
Could be doing that, too.
Why do you think they lost touch? They seem to get along so well that would be like a friendship I would mourn the loss of.
Yeah. I'm sure that she thought of him affectionately over the years, and I'm sure that he thought of her with hard eyes over the years. But I think that they wouldn't have lost touch as much if her parents hadn't been elitist assholes, honestly.
Oh my gosh, just imagine a whole different scenario of this movie. Gridley actually has no business being in town, but he knows where Josie works and plans himself with some really hastily put together driftwood sculptures to be in her path so they can have a meet cute.
Oh, huh? I started watching the Netflix series You.
Have oh you- God, oh, that's exactly where my head went there because I started watching that too. Sweet baby Jesus, I had to stop at the end of the second season because, dear God, I do not want to date ever again. All the single ladies, heed my warning. Do not watch You if you plan on dating or are dating. It is damaging.
That explains so much.
I know. I was like, wow, that's a weird thought process that my brain took. Oh, wait, now I'm putting the brain hamster in the red string, watching you, thinking Gridley is stalking Josie. It all makes sense now. Yeah.
Before the party, as the final touches are being put on the house and catering is setting up in the kitchen, Gridley goes to the den where Mr. M is playing chess against himself and absentmindedly slinking the slinky between both his hands. Hey, Mrs. M sent me over to get party clothes from you. Gridley glances over at the chess game. You winning or losing? Mr. M glances up. I'm winning and I'm losing. And I feel like that's how Mr. M is in his life. He's winning and he's losing. Like, he has this artificially really amazing house and situation and he's winning, but he's losing in his relationship with his wife, which is like off the rails. And
yeah.
At work, he's got actually a really good company, and so he's winning, but he's losing because he's not, like, willing to change or innovate, and so there's no, like, growth or anything like that.
Profound insight, Corinne.
So I just felt like here he is by himself because all of these things are of his own making by being, like, so solo in everything. That's how he's alienating his wife, but it's also how he, like, got so far in his career, and that's how he is in his business because he's just taking his own advice and he's not doing anything else. And so he's, like, literally playing chess with himself in his life and in his business.
I would isolate from his wife, too, though, because she's kind of awful. Like, she's just so, I'd be like, I'm going to be, good thing we have a big house. You're going to be in one wing and I'm going to be way over in the other one, away from you, far, far away.
But I don't think she was always like that.
Yeah, you're right.
And it's, yeah. Which is one of the things that's kind of cool about this movie.
Yeah.
Gridley steps thoughtfully towards the chessboard and says, Rook to Queen's Bishop. Oh, the old Rook to Queen's Bishop move. You know that one, Tam, right?
Nope, I don't. I do not play chess.
Mr. M moves the piece and invites Gridley to play. They have a nice, intimate conversation, and Mr. M asks Gridley about his dad. Gridley says, My dad moved to Florida after my mom died, but they were lucky that they had a lot of good years together. Not as many as you and Mrs. M. Mr. M responds bitterly, We've had a lot of years. I'll say that. Gridley tries again. 40. That's a lifetime. He moves a chess piece and Mr. M counters moving another chess piece. Sometimes it feels like two lifetimes. And I'm like, dude, seriously? You know what? There is a thing. It's called divorce and you can do it if you really feel so fucking trapped and miserable.
No. Claire won't have it. She needs to keep up appearances. People in her family do not get divorced.
Here's the thing is that part of the reason why Claire is the way she is because he's not investing in the relationship with her, but he's not stepping out of the relationship either. And I don't mean stepping out as in cheating. I just mean he's just treating her with disdain, you know? And that's like a horrible place to be in a relationship with this person who's just treating you with contempt day after day. Gridley gets a sad look in his eyes. You know, Mrs. M is trying really hard to make this party special. It must mean a lot to her. Mr. M wearily responds. The only thing she cares about is looking good for the Chronicle. Your move. By the way, thanks for the slinky. It reminds me of a time when things weren't so ordered. Gridley nods his head. You're welcome. He decisively moves his queen and states, check. Mr. M looks up at him, says seriously, you know it's good manners to let your host win. Gridley looks Mr. M in the eyes, shakes his head. Not a chance. Mr. M looks back and starts chuckling. Gridley breaks into a grin, and with that, Gridley has won over Mr. M's heart.
That's all it took, kicking his ass in chess and not letting him win.
We're about an hour out from the party, and Gridley is in the living room looking in a mirror, struggling with his tie, when he hears the clomp, clomp, clomp of heels on the stairs behind him. He turns around with his tie all afuddle and sees Josie in a form-fitting red dress that stops just below her knee. Her knees. She has two.
Thank you. I was worried about that. Somehow upstairs, she amputated her leg. Maybe that's what was in the trash, right next to the pink cake box.
I hate it when spare legs just show up in my trash bin.
That's not a spare leg. She needs that leg.
Gridley looks at Josie. Wow, you look beautiful. Josie approaches him with a smile and immediately starts fixing his tie. Thanks, so do you. Full Windsor, half Windsor, Eldridge, or Cape Knot? We are all impressed and confused by Josie's complete knowledge of ties and how to tie them. Tamara nods her head yes, too. Gridley says, what? As I suspect most of our gentle listeners will as well. Josie magically fixes his tie, which Windsor or not it is tied in, I have no idea. But she pats Gridley on the chest, indicating she's done. They stare at each other with hard eyes, and Josie breaks the moment. She looks away and sees that a string is hanging down on the giant Happy 40th Joseph and Claire sign that is hanging above the sliding glass doors. She rushes over. I've got to fix that before Mom sees. She climbs up on a chair, and Gridley follows, spotting her. Or, if Tamara was writing this section, checking out her ass, which is now at eye level. Where's the lie?
No lie.
Josie steps onto the arm of the chair for extra height and is precariously perched as she tucks the string up on the molding of the doorframe. Suddenly, she loses her balance and topples into Gridley's arms. They're both laughing at the silliness of it all, but fall silent when their closeness feels good. Their eyes meet, and they have an unspoken moment between the both of them. Mr. and Mrs. M walk into the room and witness Gridley wordlessly holding Josie while her arms are wrapped around him. But the moment is interrupted, not by Mom and Dad, but surprise by da-da-da-da-da-da, Richard!
Yay, Richard's here. All right, the party can start now.
Party animal. Yeah. I was just thinking, you know how Gridley and Josie have a lot of fun with each other? I wonder what Josie and Richard's fun looks like. The look of confusion on Tamara's face is...
Yeah. I mean, the interaction that they had was like, Sunday at 1? No, I've got a client meeting. How about the morning? We'll have breakfast. No, this, no, that. So it's like very almost rigid and sanitized and
Yeah.
You made me think.
I know. I saw these like little thought bubbles. Like, they kept on popping up, but they were empty on the inside. And then another thought bubble would pop up, but it would be empty on the inside too.
It's true. It's like, bloop, 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 nope. Bloop, 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 nope, bloop, nope, bloop, bloop, bloop. How do they have fun? How? Fun is very important in a relationship, possibly more important than making somebody laugh.
Surprise by Richard coming through the door, uninvited, holding not Josie in his arms, but a giant box. He sees Josie and Gridley together, with Josie slightly stroking the back of Gridley's neck. The door loudly closes, snapping Josie out of whatever kind of tractor beam they had going on there. Josie glances over, sees Richard, and pops out of Gridley's arms and exclaims, Richard! Plasters a smile on her face and walks over to him. He awkwardly kisses her on the cheek, so much passion, and exclaims, Sorry for barging in. I just wanted to drop off this anniversary gift before the party. At this point, Mr. M is Team Gridley and Mrs. M is Team Not Gridley. So when Richard walks in, she's thrilled. Richard pulls out the give 'em the old razzle-dazzle, razzle-dazzle routine, ignoring Josie after the initial kiss and courting her parents instead. He unpackages the gift without asking them, wooing them with a pricey Swiss espresso machine. Granddad walks into the room to check out the kerfuffle, and Josie says, Richard, this is my granddad. Richard turns around. Hi, nice to meet you, sir. At this point, Mindy is downstairs to witness Richard at his finest. Josie says, This is my sister Mindy. Richard extends his hand and she pulls her hand back, thinks better, and shakes his hand with a glare. Richard says he's going to head out, but
Mrs. M insists that he stay and spend the night in the blue room next to Josie's,
winky winky,
as opposed to Gridley, who got stuck in the yellow room across the house from Josie. Mr. M eyes the espresso machine suspiciously and says to Richard, "You know, we used to carry this line, but stopped because the frother always broke." Richard assures him, "Oh, not this model. It's new and fantastic. Let me show you how it works." He picks up the espresso machine, carries it into the kitchen, Richard splaining the entire way as everyone follows behind. Gridley is left in the living room by himself, shaking his fist at the sky and mouthing, "Curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal." He hadn't imagined that Richard would just pop on by. In the den, Granddad has Big Mouth Bass plugged in and playing on the table. It's singing, "Way down upon the Swanee River." As the fish flaps its tail, almost slapping his face, Granddad air slaps it back. How dare the fish interrupt his puzzle playing with its abrupt movements. Back upstairs in the kitchen, Richard is saying a bunch of technical mumbo-jumbo about the machine. Richard, splaining per usual, plugs it in, and the power goes out. The obvious culprit, as Mrs. M exclaims, "That stupid fish knocked the power out."
How in the world does she make that connection? The fish was plugged in, singing by its lonesome, minding its business, the minute a European coffee maker gets plugged in, the power blinks out, and somehow it's the fish's fault. Oh, Claire.
You're right. Oh, Claire.
Everyone meals around, and Claire spins out in a panic. "Somebody get candles! Where's the flashlight?" She hollers into the darkness. Richard produces a flashlight app from his phone while Gridley brings over some candles. I'll check the breaker," he offers, but she declines angrily. "No! You've done enough!" Richard sees his inn and announces, "I'll go check the breakers." And he and Josie shuffle away when no one objects. In the next room, Granddad wanders around trying to find a way out. He's knocking into windows and bumping into things like a pinball. Papa Mayfield informs the room that the electrician can't get here till tomorrow, as Claire further falls into hysterics. She balances more candles on the table while muttering, "Wax gets on everything, and the photographer's gonna be here any minute. Why is this happening to me?" Gridley suggests there's a generator next door at the Wilsons. "No," she shouts, "we do not associate with them." Josie and Richard finally make their way down to the breaker box, and before he tries to diagnose the electricity problem, he turns towards her and accuses, "Why were you in Gridley's arms?" "Oh, I lost my footing," she says dismissively, "and he just caught me." Her nonchalance at the accusation seems to disarm him, and his face softens. "Oh, okay, I just saw you two, and I got a little jealous." He turns his attention back towards the breaker and flips all the switches, but nothing happens. Pa and Ma Mayfield are sitting in the darkness, and he starts reminiscing about their first date. "Remember the power went out at the restaurant we were at?" But Claire is not in the mood for memory lane and sits there fuming about their predicament. "And I forgot my wallet," he adds. "I couldn't even afford dinner." "We couldn't afford a lot of dinners back then," Claire adds bitterly and tosses back her drink. Outside, there is a covert mission taking place. Mindy and Wade Wilson are quietly wheeling over the generator. Gridley is attempting to connect it as Grandpa looks on. It winds up he did find his way out of that sitting room. Mindy and Wade giggle upon their delivery and hurry off, while Granddad observes, "I like seeing Mindy open up so much." "You do?" Gridley asks. "Maybe we should get you some green hair too," he says, teasing. "No, no," Granddad objects. "I'll keep the gray." Gridley feels a kinship with him and admits, "You know, it does feel good to be in a relationship, even if it's pretend." "Still pretend, huh?" Granddad asks. And Tamara asks, "When the fuck did he tell Granddad that this was all a farce? Did I miss that part?" Because they have this conversation like, "Oh, I'm in a fake relationship with your granddaughter." And he's like, "Oh, you still are?" And I'm like, "When did you guys have that conversation?" I do not recall saying that.
This is what I thought. I thought that he slipped up, and I thought that Granddad had figured it out. But I think that your point is more apt than what the conclusions that I had previously drawn in my head.
I just need more Tim Conway parts, and I feel like that one was cut, and I feel betrayed. Oh. Cursed for sudden and inevitable betrayal, surprised by love.
How dare they?
Shaking my fist. Shaking my fist.
Any Tim Conway parts. Genius.
Genius, I tell y'all. Yep, he confirms. She's still with Richard. Granddad gets philosophical and decides to spit some wisdom. Let me tell you something. If you never commit to anything, you'll never realize how many great things pass you by in life. Gridley chuckles. You realize this is coming from a guy who hasn't spoken to his family in 2 years? Grandpa laughs and good-naturedly shines his flashlight right into Gridley's face as he revs up the generator and all the lights on the house ding, 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 flicker back on. Success! Gridley and Granddad make their way back inside. Only to see Claire gushing over Richard. Oh my God, thank you so much, she says. What would we have done without you? He takes the credit while Josie looks on uncomfortably. Granddad stops Gridley before they enter and exclaims, you gonna let that stiff take all the credit? But Gridley just shrugs. That's what I'm here for. And Granddad walks away disgusted. Claire, made whole from the electricity coming back on, gets back in the game and starts shouting orders to everyone. Get dressed! Blow out these candles! Clean everything up! The photographer's going to be here any minute! After all this, Gridley goes upstairs and tries to take off the suit and tie while unburdening his soul to Rex the dog, who is oddly enough taking up camp in Gridley's guest room. Josie enters. What are you doing? She asks. She stops him from removing his tie and straightens it back around his neck. He shrugs. They love Richard and hate me. My work here is done. You don't need me anymore. Oh, yeah, I do, she breathes quietly, and we get the signature Paul Campbell brow. Let me get this straight, he asks. Am I your plus one or your plus two, or is Richard your plus two? Just stay, she repeats huskily, and grabs onto his tie a little tighter and pulls him ever so close to her. He goes in for a kiss, but just as their lips are about to touch, Josie's mom calls from downstairs. No! Josie, come on down here. Kiss us. Interrupt us.
Oh, motherfucker.
Coming! She calls back, and as she hurries out the door, he looks at her and says with conviction, I was here first, so I'm your plus one.
Oh, fuck. That almost kiss is the hottest almost kiss that I think I have ever seen. I was like...
And Corinne has basically slid out of her chair.
You know, you may think it's awkward, Tam, when I start getting naked during our podcast recording, but sometimes I just can't help myself.
It gets so hot in here, I have to cool off.
It's so hot.
And now, a slight interlude. We introduce the mystery dun, of the dun, missing dun. Fabergé egg.
Dun, dun, dun!
Everyone except Gridley is downstairs in a tizzy.
He's probably, like, making sure that his Woody goes down before he heads downstairs because... what happened
and Corinne too.
Moments ago was so hot!
The Fabergé egg isn't anywhere, and Richard takes this opportunity to don his Sherlock Holmes hat and bubble pipe. I hate to be the one to say it, he puffs, releasing bubbles into the air. Bloop, 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 bloop. But we all know where it's gone. Josie is confused. What do you mean? Richard takes another bubbly puff. Bloop, 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 bloop. Gridley. Josie is resolute. It was not Gridley. But Richard is determined to throw Gridley under the bus. Mr. M calmly says... It'll show up, and if it doesn't, we'll get another one. And the interlude abruptly ends because, ding dong, the doorbell rings and Mrs. M rushes to answer it. The Chronicle photographer has arrived, and he's hot. Mrs. M plasters a smile onto her face and says, welcome to our happy home. But the only person who is smiling is Mrs. M.
I did like how he like opened up the door and snapped the picture and everybody was kind of like in an awkward position or making a stinky face unintentionally.
Yeah, Mindy was on the floor on her hands and knees on the floor looking for the egg. Richard, Josie, and Mr. M were all kind of just staring at the photographer like, what? And fucking Gridley was halfway down the stairs and Granddad was just like staring off into the distance. Ugh, so good.
It's later in the evening, and the party is in full swing. Somehow, Richard and Gridley end up standing next to each other for a moment, and at that moment, the photographer approaches them and snaps some pics. "Can I have your names?" Richard grabs a card from his pocket and hands it to the photographer. "Richard Wright, from Wright Silver and Gum." Gridley offers, "Gridley, from, just Gridley." The photographer chuckles sympathetically, "Been there." And
when he said that, I thought, "Gridley, just Gridley," because we used to live by a street called Gridley.
Oh, we did, yeah!
"Gridley, Gawain adjacent."
The photographer asks, "And who are you gentlemen to the family?"
Richard puffs up his chest. "I'm Josie Mayfield's boyfriend."
Gridley tries talking. "I'm her," and Richard interrupts, "an acquaintance."
Gridley is over Richard and speaks up. "Josie and I went to prom together at Maplewood High."
The photographer gets excited. "That's my alma mater," Gridley says. "You're kidding." And suddenly they break out into the school chant. "Bear down, Maplewood. Fight, Leafs, fight."
The photographer is in it. Roots in the community, enduring friendships. Oh, this is the kind of stuff the Chronicle loves.
Josie passes by and the photographer stops her. "Miss Mayfield, I'd love to get a shot of you and your old high school boyfriend."
Gridley clarifies, No. "We only went out once." The photographer doesn't care and excitedly asks Gridley to put his arm around her. He snaps some photos and leaves, while Richard stands off to the side, ignored and unhappy. Or as Tamara would say,
"Alone, alone, alone."
Across the room, Mindy is sitting at the bottom of the steps, staring sadly at the door.
She's sad because Wade Wilson hasn't shown up. Her mom approaches, and when she finds out why Mindy is melancholy, she is completely dismissive and controlling towards her, per usual.
The photographer approaches and asks for a pic, and Mrs. M smiles and says, "Of course. Come here, Mindy."
As she grabs Mindy and pulls her closer, Mindy has had enough and jerks away.
"Do you have to control everything I do?"
Mrs. M looks at her with the scary eyes and the scary whisper.
"Somebody has to," Mindy exclaims.
"You're right, me," she says, raising her voice. "I like my green hair. I'm different from everyone in the family. I may not be Josie with the degree on the business fast track, but I'm still worth something."
A hush has fallen over the room as people look to see what's going on.
Mindy adds loudly, "And I dropped out of college."
Suddenly, Mr. M is very much a part of this conversation.
"When did this happen?"
Mindy explains that she dropped out 2 semesters ago, has kept her parents' tuition money in a bank account, and has been supporting herself through singing in a coffee house.
"This is who I am," she proclaims.
Mr. M is not happy. "And who exactly might that be?" And we hear
the sound of silence.
Interrupted by,
"Hello, darkness, my old friend."
A throat being cleared. It's Wade Wilson.
He's arrived. Yay. Not awkward at all.
Mm-mm. That man had a chin. Wade Wilson. AKA Chin Wilson. Man. He was just like all jaw, bone, structure, 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 structure.
He was in the movie Cross Country Christmas. He played the lead's brother in that.
Oh, I thought him and his chin looked familiar.
Yeah.
Gridley, who is on the other side of the room, is trying to figure out a way to throw Mindy a lifeline. His brain hamster is working overtime, but it has been working overtime this entire trip, and it's exhausted. So it comes up with an idea, but maybe not the best idea, but one that will certainly mix things up. Gridley starts singing. "Won't you come home, Bill Bailey? Won't you come home? She moans all day long." Mindy is not into it, mouthing at him. "No," gesturing. "No," shaking her head. "No." But Gridley moves over to the piano and Mindy decides, what the fuck? She dives in. "I'll do the cooking, honey," Gridley sings. "I'll pay the rent."
And Mindy continues, I know that I've done wrong.
Gridley starts playing the piano, and Mindy walks towards him singing, at one point duetting with Josie, while Richard looks on in utter disdain. Josie and Mindy flank Gridley on both sides of the piano, and Gridley shouts, everybody! Josie starts clapping, and the entire party starts singing that hit song, Bill Bailey! You know that hit song, Bill Bailey, right?
Only after this movie.
Eventually, even Mr. and Mrs. M join in, and Granddad starts arrhythmically snapping as his fingers as the photographer excitedly takes pictures of the whole thing. Mindy puts a bow on the song with a final line of Scat singing, and the entire room bursts into enthusiastic applause. Yeah! Muppet arms waving for everyone.
I was worried about that because when she started singing the song, she wasn't very strong. And I was like, oh no, she's going to suck.
Right.
She didn't. Her
like voice finally, was really nice.
Yeah. When she got her footing, and I think she played it off well, like kind of the timid start and the, oh no, what's going to happen? And then when she starts belting it out, I'm like, oh, thank God. Because there's nothing worse than somebody's like, I'm going to quit college and be a singer. Even though I can't sing. The impromptu singing seems to have loosened up the party and everyone is having a great time. Dad is telling jokes and Mom is laughing. Somehow the night has brought them together and loosened Claire the fuck up. Ma and Pa Mayfield reminisce about when they first opened the company and how much fun they used to have. Well, Claire says, speaking of that, I had an idea. What about a line of dogware for the kitchen? Mr. M is taken aback at first, but then loves the idea and the fact that she wants to participate. He then tells everyone at the party who would listen that dogware is the new direction. And Claire smiles proudly, finally feeling seen and heard and not like everybody in the house is fleeing from her. The photographer, thinking he's gotten all the shots he needs, tells the hostess that he's leaving.
Oh!
Just hallmark that for later. And Claire encourages him to stay. It's a party after all, and we haven't even brought out the cake.
Ooh.
Gridley, hearing this, says, I'm on it, Mrs. M, and the photographer agrees to stay. A few servers and Gridley bring out the cake, and it is gorgeous. Pristine, white, beautiful, frosted. Gridley raises his glass and makes a toast to Mr. and Mrs. M. Still together after all these years. The tide may have taken you here and there, but true love like driftwood reinvents itself and stands the test of time. He gets a little emotional as he looks over at Josie and Richard right behind her, glaring back at him. Love, he finishes, may it always find a way.
Aww.
Everyone claps. The photographer is especially taken with the cake and asks the hostess if she made it. She's at a loss, not wanting to lie, until Gridley chimes in, oh yes, the hostess made it, and it's not normally what she does, but she was willing to try something different. Touched, Claire Mouse, thank you.
Aww.
As the photographer asks to take a shot of the family with the cake. After a few clicks, he notices the fancy espresso maker and asks, hey, what's that shiny thing? And Richard proudly tells him, it's a newfangled coffee machine from Switzerland. Surprisingly, he could care less. He just wants it moved because it's creating a glare in his shot. Gridley, always the helper, eagerly carts it out of the room so their moment can be picture perfect. The cake is a hit, and everyone is having heaping platefuls of it. Everyone, especially the photographer who wants to know what's in the cake. And Claire will never tell, but Josie will. Psst, it's Hostess Twinkies.
It's the morning after the party, and Mr. and Mrs. M walk outside together to grab the paper. Much to Mrs. M's delight, they've made the front page. She reads the glowing review and pauses slightly horrified after reading. The party was full of warmth and whimsy, and they had an anniversary cake made of Twinkies? Mr. M chimes in. I knew it tasted familiar. Mrs. M starts to laugh. Wade's mom walks up. She's a horrible woman that Mrs. M has a rivalry with. But due to the magic of Gridley, Mrs. M has said fuck all to convention and to fucks. So when Wade's mom brags about her son becoming a doctor and asks condescendingly, "What are your children up to?" Mrs. M gleefully says, "I'm so glad you asked. My oldest is still selling wooden spoons and my youngest sings in a coffee house. She's very good and we couldn't be prouder." Wade's mom is disgusted and walks off huffily. As Mr. and Mrs. M walk towards the house, Mrs. M says, "You know, I wanted the party so we could get in the Chronicle. I was caught up in appearances because that's all I have." Mr. M pshaws. "That's not true," Mrs. M responds. "It is. The kids are grown. We've drifted apart. And until last night, I forgot what it was like to have you listen to me. I like being a team again." Mr. M looks at her with heart eyes. "So do I." He puts his arm around her and pulls her close as they walk back to the house. Back inside, everyone is hanging out in the kitchen. Mrs. M grabs two large Costco-sized bottles of extra virgin olive oil for Gridley. And Mr. M says he'd like to meet with Gridley in regards to using some driftwood in their products, if he's available and interested. The hamster in Gridley's head is doing a little soft chew, singing, "Everything's coming up roses." And when Gridley responds to Mr. M, saying his plans are open, Richard gets a diabolical twinkle in his eyes, and if he had a mustache, he'd be twirling that motherfucking thing.
Sure would.
"I hate to interrupt, but you aren't really available," Gridley responds with a smile. "Something on your mind, Dick?" Richard continues. Yeah, I'm like, that may be the only time we hear the word dick in a Hallmark movie.
And it was worth it.
It was so worth it.
Richard continues. "Yes, you see, Gridley is a lion liar pants. He moves around every 6 months. He's obviously hiding something, and he's leaving for Puerto Rico next week with a one-way ticket." Josie speaks up. "Richard, what are you doing? Gridley is crewing on a friend's boat in Puerto Rico. He's never been and wanted to go." Richard looks at her surprised. "You knew?" Josie is nonchalant. "Yeah, it's just Gridley being Gridley." But Gridley steps up. "You know what? Mr. Wright is right. I have some confessions to make. One, Mr. and Mrs. M, it was me that TP'd your house in 12th grade. It was glorious, but I feel bad about it and I sincerely apologize. Two, I've been running for a long time. Ever since my mom died, I couldn't find a place that felt like home. So I traveled to all these different countries, did all these different jobs, looking for where I fit. I never felt like I had a reason to settle down." He looks over at Josie. "And now I do." He reaches into his bag and picks up his Puerto Rico ticket and tears it. And we get to number three. "I still have feelings for you, Josie. Josie, I..." And he's interrupted when Mrs. M glances into Gridley's open duffel bag and sees her treasured Fabergé egg. "My egg!" she exclaims, reaching into his bag and pulling out the large, bejeweled emerald egg. Mrs. M is very disappointed. "I was just starting to like you." Mr. M says, "You must have a good reason." And Gridley is sure that there is. He just has no idea how it got in there. Gridley says, "There may be a lot of things you may not like about me, but I'm not a thief." The room is silent. No one stands up for Gridley, and he leaves. Josie runs after him and says that she knows that he didn't take the egg. He thanks her and says he meant his declaration of love to her. Josie doesn't know what to say, but Gridley doesn't have any expectations. He tells her he just wants her to be happy, and he walks off.
Gridley!
Gridley, come back! Gridley, come back! You can lay it all on me! Gridley, come back! Later that day, the family is sitting around the table, somberly eating brunch. Everyone seems to be down in the dumps, except Richard, who's happily chewing on his eggs. "Say, Mr. Mayfield, how about we set up a meeting for that candidate that I think will be perfect for your company? He's got experience in international sales and even speaks Mandarin." Papa M gets a nostalgic look in his eyes and says, "Remember Gridley's truck that ran on Chinese food?" Everyone laughs at the memory. "Do you know how hungry," Josie shares, "that I was driving in that thing?" "Oh my gosh, yes," Mindy agrees. "I could go for some orange chicken right now." "Kung Pao shrimp," Papa adds. But amidst all the good memories, Claire has to be the Debbie Downer and says, "I just can't believe he was gonna steal my egg." Pa Mayfield says, "Claire, it doesn't matter." She looks at him in shock before he adds, "It was a fake. All those years ago, I bought you a fake Fabergé egg because I was trying to impress you. And I know how disappointed you were that our first anniversary, all I could get you was a flower." She quietly gets up from the table and makes her way over to a drawer in the dining room, pulls out a dry-pressed rose, and hands it to him. "I kept that rose for 30 years. They gaze at each other for a moment, and the mood shifts. Claire proclaims, "Since we're being honest, I also have a confession. I never made the dulce de leche cake. Bought it from a bakery every year." Pa Mayfield smirks and admits, "I never liked that cake." And she smiles back, "Neither did I." And they laugh. Josie has her own bit of news. She needs to spread her wings and get away from the family business. "I don't cook or know the first thing about cookware. How did I get here?" she says, a little teary-eyed. "I woke up one day and I was in my 30s, and now I can't even do anything on my own. I can't even take a walk without MapQuest." And Tamara asks, "How old is this movie? Because who uses MapQuest anymore?"
No kidding.
"I think I need some time to figure things out." Pa Mayfield is reluctant and a little sad, but says that they trust her decision and they just want her to be happy, even if that means being with Richard. Which thrills Richard. He looks at her and says, "Isn't that great, honey?" And Josie looks less enthusiastic, almost, dare I say, disgusted. Ooh. Ma Mayfield looks at Mindy and adds, "And you too. We trust you as well. Even if it includes singing and green hair." And Mindy is thrilled. She can finally take the helm of her own life. Just then, Rex pitter-patters downstairs with Pa Mayfield's watch in his mouth. "Hey," he cries, "that's my watch." Claire chases him down and retrieves it from his mouth before he can run out the door. And I wrote in my notes that he ran out the door, but the door was closed. And unless the dog can open the door, he was not going outside. But Claire brings it over to the table. Joseph nods towards Rex and says, "Well, there's your thief." And Josie looks sick. She throws down her napkin and excuses herself. Richard, oblivious to her feelings, tries to pitch another candidate to Mr. Mayfield, who just smirks. A smirk that implies, "Don't put your luck, buddy." And says, "Let's just stick with the one, okay, Richard?" Upstairs, Mindy confronts her sister as she's packing to leave. She stands in the doorway and asks, "Well, what now?" And Josie does not know what she means. So Mindy spells it out to her. "You've been bringing guys home like Richard for years and using Dad's disapproval as an excuse to say goodbye." Her sister denies this and Mindy shrugs. "It just seems to me that if you really liked any of them, you'd fight for them." Josie's expression is part acknowledgement, part sadness, and a smidge of shame. She takes her suitcase downstairs where Richard is excitedly telling her, "We can find a job with my company." She stops and tells him she can't. "I'm sorry. I know that we're perfect on paper, but this is just not working." He shakes his head. I don't understand." And she admits, "Yeah. And maybe that's the problem." Then it dawns on him and he starts getting angry. "Is this about your little high school boyfriend? How could you be serious about him? He's a loser." "No, he's not," she says with a conviction that surprises even her. "I let him walk away once before and I'm not going to do it again." Ma and Pa and Mindy are standing in the next room and Dad tosses her keys and calls out, "Take my car!" Just as Granddad rounds the corner and nods with an emphatic, "You go, girl!" Granddad spoke. The family is shocked, but Josie's got some chasing to do, so everyone huddles around Granddad. "How long have you been able to talk?" Claire accuses, and he shakes his head with the, "Guess I have some explaining to do." But the new Claire doesn't care. She embraces her father and says, "Oh, I don't care." And the whole family shares a group hug as Josie races back into the city. Aww. She parks her car by the Chinese food truck chariot near the park and runs towards the waterfront where Gridley is setting up his driftwood sculptures. She hollers at him, Do you regret tearing up that ticket? And he, surprised to see her, smiles and shares, I really didn't think that all the way through. She crosses the grass towards him. This week, she relays, was really full of surprises, and I have a confession to make. His eyes twinkle. What's that? He asks, slowly walking towards her. Once she's in front of him, she utters, I don't want, while grabbing the collar of his shirt, Mr. Right. I want Mr. Wrong. He puts his arms on her waist as she kisses him deeply. She pulls back for a moment to breathe. Mr. Totally Wrong. And they full on fucking kiss. And it's a great one. With the city skyline behind them, the camera pans out, and they're still kissing. And that's how you do it. Don't fucking pan out to the water or birds chirping or the sky. You only get so many kisses in this movie, and you gotta squeeze every bit of juice out of them. So camera, stay on the kiss. Stay on it long. Stay on it hard. Stay on it till it's over. And they do. Till the end.
Tamara's suddenly inspired to become a Hallmark director.
I'm like, I just can't stand. Okay, what was it? 27-hour day around the campfire. They kiss and they just get like a little peck. And then the camera pans out to the night sky. Who gives a fuck about the night sky? I know I said it before and I'm saying it again. And I'm not bitter about it. I don't have strong feelings that I'm bringing up 3 episodes later. Not at all. That was a really great kiss, though.
There was serious heat between them when they had those like moments of looking at each other's eyes and stuff like that. I was like, oh, when they did that, almost kissed upstairs in the bedroom. I was like,
look away, Rex. Look away. So what do you give this movie, Corinne?
Okay. I'm a little torn.
Oh.
I will say this. I compromised. I wanted to give it a 5 because it was like good in so many different ways. But it had a gigantic fail on the diversity front. A big whitewash fail on the diversity front. And I would say that... So then that like knocks it down to a 4. Because in my world, a 5 has not only a good script, but it's also inclusive in some way, shape, or form, you know.
Right, yeah.
And this was inclusive of a guy who makes driftwood sculptures.
And they're not nearly represented enough in Hallmark movies. They're not.
It's true. And how many vegetable oil-fueled vehicles are there in Hallmark movies? Really, I ask you that. So I bump it up to 4.5 dry kisses because the movie is just so fucking good.
Okay, that's so funny because that is exactly the rating I'm going to give it to. What? And for the same fucking reasons that the diversity kicks it down a notch.
Oh, we forgot about the dulce de leche cake, though. Maybe that bumps it up to a 5 because, you know, 3 words of Spanish.
Yeah, and the cake has no speaking parts, so no, that does not count. It does not pass the ODK test.
No, it does not pass the ODK test.
Yeah, if the cake started singing and dancing in a Spanish accent,
oh my God, perhaps... that would be so offensive. Oh no!
But yeah, no diversity. This was one of the first ones we watched when we first decided to do this podcast. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's a cute movie. And then after seeing all the other Hallmark movies, I'm like, oh no, that's top of the line.
Yeah.
That's like, Oscar. It's high up there.
Yeah.
It's freaking, like, Paul Campbell is glorious. Love him in this part, even though I do prefer a little surly Paul Campbell. Like, I thought he played it well.
Yeah.
Love Tim Conway. Also knocking it down 0.5 star because there wasn't near enough Tim Conway for me. Need more Tim Conway in my life. But I also love the chemistry between Hilary Burton and Paul Campbell. Mm-hmm. It was hot.
Oh, so hot.
I loved the family dynamic and how it changed throughout the movie to give everybody a happily ever after. The parents played good, crappy parents, and I'm glad that they got their shit together at the end. Even had a cute little doggy. So I am giving it 4.5 dry kisses. It was a great movie and I would recommend it to anybody that's like, what Hallmark movie should I watch? Well, you should be surprised by love.
One thing I do want to say about Hillary Burton, she's a really interesting person. And she actually, at a later date, she had a Hallmark movie that she was going to do. But she, in her contract, she had different kinds of inclusion that she wanted in the movie. And because of that, she ended up getting dropped from the film and replaced with somebody else. Since then, Hallmark has become more inclusive in the different movies that they do sometimes in regards to including some same-sex partnerships in some movies and, you know, having more diverse casting. But I would say that Hillary Burton was a trailblazer.
Oh, so it was about, when you said inclusion, I'm like, is it including shirtless men? I need that in my contract. All of my roles need to have at least 20 seconds of shirtless time on air. No?
No, okay. Sorry to disappoint you.
That would be in my stipulation. I would need shirtless co-hosts, not for the podcast, but if I was in the Hallmark role. I get enough of that from Corinne.
But I'm offering it to you, and you just always are turning me down. No, I think
as you fling off your bra and streak the camera.
I think that if she had required shirtless guys in her future movies, then it would just be like Christopher Russell, who was in Love in the Forecast over and over and over again, because he's had several shirtless Hallmark movies.
Maybe that's in his contract. I need to show my pecs in order to do this movie.
What do we have coming up next week?
Next week, we are doing our other Valentine, the other love of our life. We are doing Falling for You with Mr. Tyler Ty-Ty Hines.
Ty-Ty! I'm so excited. I need a little Ty-Ty in my life.
Everybody needs a little Ty-Ty in their life. I need a little Ty-Ty in me.
Oh, in you. Hello.
From the movie Nasty and other things you can do.
If you have anything that you want to share about Ty-Ty, Paul Campbell, Tim Conway, Surprised by Love, how awesome Hillary Burton is, or any other thoughts that you would like to share, feel free to email us at wondrykiss@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us via the social meds. Also, via the social meds, you can see a beautifully photoshopped picture of Tyler Hines' face on a person who is wearing lederhosen because Tamara loves me. Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. All at One Dry Kiss.
One Dry Kiss, spelled O-N-E. I forgot to tell you, your mom gave me the rolling her eyes emoji. I was putting up our last movie, the Love of Course post on Instagram. And she's like, oh, love those genuine smiles. And I was like, yes, Barbara, they're genuine smiles because they're genuinely in love. And the genuine smiles are reflecting their genuine love. And she just sent me back an eye roll emoji. I'm like, surprised she doesn't share my sentiment. Anywho, if you, like Barbara, would like to let us know what you think of this show, we would love your 5-star ratings and reviews anywhere you hear this podcast. We love to hear what you say and think, especially if they're good things. So if you could do that for us, we really appreciate it. And as always, we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah.
Mwah.
We'll see you next time.
See you next time. Have a great week, motherfuckers.
Yeah, y'all. Some people call me difficult, but I don't want to be doing the podcast twice.
Then it'd just be me. With gaps in between.
I'm not even... Oh, okay. You're like... And since Tamara accidentally deleted the file, her part will be played by a sock puppet that I made. And I'll be voicing all of her parts.
I was just thinking it'd be like Mr. Rogers, where he's like, how was your day? Pause.
Dingle, dingle,
pause.
Dingle, 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 dingle. I'll be the fucking trolley. Dingle, dingle, dingle.
If people could respond back, they could pretend it's like karaoke. It's like second host karaoke.
Oh, okay. No, I don't think I'd like that. No. I want to be on the show. Oh, okay. Quite honestly.
Well, yeah. then I would take out my part, and then it would be second host karaoke with you.
It'd be Tamara and her multiple personalities talking to herself and her imaginary friend, Karen.
Oh, Karen, we love